In the name of all that is holy, couldn't anyone have let us know that von Richthofen had moved back into the sector? Michael shouted at the squadron adjutant. Isn't there any bloody intelligence in this army? Those deskwallers at division are responsible for the murder of Andrew and the six other men we lost today. That is really unfair, old man, the adjutant murmured as he puffed on his pipe. You know how this fellow von Richthofen works. Will-o'-the-Wisp and all that stuff. Von Richthofen had devised the strategy of loading his aircraft onto open goods trucks and shuttling the entire Jagdstaffel up and down the line, appearing abruptly with his 60 crack pilots wherever he was least expected, wracking dreadful execution amongst the unprepared Allied airmen for a few days or a week, and then moving on again. I telephoned division as soon as the first of our planes landed, and they had only just received the intelligence themselves. They think von Richthofen and his circus have taken up temporary residence at the old airstrip just south of Douai. A lot of good that does us now, with Andrew dead. As he said it, the enormity of it at last hit Michael, and his hands began to shake. He felt a nerve jumping in his cheek. He had to turn away to the small window of the cottage that the adjutant used as the squadron office. Behind him, the adjutant remained silent, giving Michael time to collect himself. The old airstrip at Douai. Michael thrust his hands into his pockets to keep them still, and he drove his mind from the memory of Andrew to consider instead the technical aspects. Those new gun emplacements, they must have moved up to guard von Richthofen's Jagdstaffel. Michael, you are commanding the squadron, at least temporarily, until division confirms or appoints another commander. Michael turned back, hands still in his pockets, and nodded, not yet trusting his voice. You will have to draw up a new duty roster, the adjutant prompted him gently, and Michael shook his head slightly, as though to clear it. We can't send out less than full squadron strength, he said. Not with a circus out there, which means that we can't maintain full-time daylight cover over the designated squadron sector. The adjutant nodded in agreement. It was obvious that to send out single flights was suicidal. What is our operational strength? Michael demanded. At the moment, 8. 4 machines were badly shot up. If it goes on like this, it's going to be a bloody April, I am afraid. All right, Michael nodded. We will scrub the old roster. We can only fire 2 more sorties today. All 8 aircraft, noon and dusk. Keep the new chums out of it as much as possible. The adjutant was making notes, and as Michael concentrated on his new duties, his hands stopped shaking, and that corpse-grey pallor of his face improved. Telephone division and warn them that we will not be able to cover the sector adequately. Ask them when we can expect to be reinforced. Tell them that an estimated 6 new batteries have been moved up to... Michael read the map references off his notepad. And tell them also that I noticed a design modification on the albatrosses of the circus. He explained the relocation of the engine radiator. Tell them I estimate the Bosch have 60 of those new albatrosses in von Richthofen's Jagdstaffel. When you have done all that, call me, and we will work out a new roster. But warn the lads, there will be a squadron sweep at noon. Now, I need a shave and a bath. Mercifully, there was no time during the rest of that day for Michael to dwell on Andrew's death. He flew both sorties with a depleted squadron, and although the knowledge that the German circus was in the sector worked on all their nerves, the patrols were completely uneventful. They saw not a single enemy machine. When they landed for the last time in the dusk, Michael took a bottle of rum down to where Mac and his team of mechanics were working by lantern light on the damaged SE-5As and spent an hour with them, giving them encouragement. For they were all anxious and depressed by the day's losses, particularly the death of Andrew, whom they had all adored and hero-worshipped. He was a good un. Mac, with black grease to the elbows, looked up from the engine he was working on and accepted the tin mug of rum that Michael handed him. He was a real good un, the Major was. He said it for all of them. Don't often find one like him. You don't. Michael trudged back through the orchard, looking up at the sky through the trees. He could see the stars. It would be flying weather again tomorrow, and he was deadly afraid. I've lost it, he whispered. My nerve is gone. I'm a coward, and my cowardice killed Andrew. That knowledge had been at the back of his mind all that day, but he had suppressed it. Now, when he faced it squarely, it was like a hunter following a wounded leopard and a cover. He knew it was there, but the actual sight of it as they came face to face turned a man's belly to water. A coward, he said aloud, lashing himself with a word, and he remembered Andrew's smile and the tam o' shanter set jauntily on his head. What cheer, my boy? He could almost hear Andrew's voice. And then he saw him falling down the sky with the burning green scarf around his throat, and Michael's hands began to shake again. A coward, he repeated, and the pain was too much to bear alone, and he hurried to the mess, blinded by his guilt so that he missed his footing and stumbled more than once. The adjutant and the other pilots, some of them still in flying rig, were waiting for Michael. It was the senior officer's duty to begin the wake. That was squadron ritual. On a table, in the centre of the mess, were seven bottles of black label Johnny Walker whiskey, one for each of the missing airmen. When Michael entered the room, everybody stood, not for him, but as a last respect to the missing men. All right, gentlemen, Michael said. Let us send them on their way. The most junior officer, already briefed by the others in his duties, opened a bottle of whisky. The black labels gave the correct funereal touch. He came to Michael and filled his glass, then moved on to the others in order of seniority. They held the brimming glasses and waited while the adjutant, his briar still clamped in his teeth, seated himself at the ancient piano in the corner of the mess and began to bang out the opening chord of Chopin's funeral march. The officers of No. 21 Squadron stood to attention and tapped their glasses on tabletops and the bar counter, keeping time with the piano, and one or two of them hummed quietly. On the bar counter there were laid out the personal possessions of the missing pilots. After dinner these would be auctioned off, and the squadron pilots would pay extravagant prices that a few guineas could be sent to a new widow or a bereaved mother. There were Andrew's golf clubs, which Michael had never seen him use, and the hardy trout rod, and his grief came back fresh and strong, so that he thumped his glass on the counter with such force that whiskey slopped over the rim, and the fumes prickled his eyes. Michael wiped them on his sleeve. The adjutant crashed through the last bar, and then stood up and took his glass. Nobody said a word, but they all lifted their own glasses, thought their own thoughts for a second, and then drained them. Immediately the junior officer refilled each tumbler. All seven bottles must be finished. That was part of the tradition. Michael ate no supper, but stood by the bar and helped consume the seven bottles. He was still sober. The liquor seemed to have no effect on him. I must be an alcoholic at last, he thought. Andrew always said I had great potential, and the liquor did not even deaden the pain that Andrew's name inflicted. He bid 5 guineas each for Andrew's golf clubs and the hardy split-cane rod. By that time the 7 bottles were all empty. He ordered another bottle for himself and went alone to his tent. He sat on the cot with the rod on his lap. Andrew had boasted that he had landed a 50-pound salmon with that stick, and Michael had called him a liar. "Oh, ye of little faith," Andrew had chided him sorrowfully. "I believed you all along." Michael caressed the old rod and drank straight from the bottle. A little later, Biggs looked in. "Congratulations on your victory, sir." Three other pilots had confirmed Michael's shooting down of the pink albatross. "Biggs, will you do me a favour?"
"Of course, sir."
"Bugger off. There's a good fellow."